All right, folks, it's time for another episode of Science Nights, and today, since we're such good kids and got through all of our homework with the different science disciplines, we get to have a little bit of fun talking about probably one of the most enticing, intoxicating things ever about the space program. We're going to go over the Apollo missions. Yes. So for this episode of the Apollo missions, I'm Josh.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Peter.
And I doubt that that cast is going to change. Although the clothes will change. I can probably guarantee that.
No.
So first of all, what is Apollo? Well, he's a Greek god. He's Zeus's son, well known for his golden bow. But he's also the name of a series of missions that ran from the United States' NASA program from 1961 to 1972. They were the first manned flights of these missions in 1968. And maybe against popular misconception, Apollo is not the name of the rockets. They're the Saturn IB and the Saturn V. Apollo is the name of the overall mission and specifically concerns with the place where the astronauts sit. How about we start with the rockets, though, just real quick, just to get that one out of the way. So the Saturn IB and the Saturn V rockets were used to launch Apollo. And if you've seen, I'll include an image here. It'll probably be right over Adam. But it's the Saturn V. I'm just going to use the Saturn V because it's the most known one.
Yeah.
It's this thing that's 35 stories tall, and it has so much... It has to have so much fuel in it to escape the Earth's atmosphere that this thing has to go thousands of miles an hour.
Up to this point, it's still the largest rocket we've ever built, with the most lifting capabilities.
Right, but that's about to change soon. Hopefully NASA's got something to launch in 2018 that we're looking forward to.
The SLS.
Yeah. But
it's still not as big, though.
Still
I've
not
got
as big,
a two-scale
but
image
the,
in front of me, which I can show.
With just the power, though. It's got the power.
Right. Yeah.
Which is what we want. It's like John. It's small, but packs a little bit of power.
it holds about 10,000 more kilograms max.
Yeah.
But until that point, we didn't really make any huge leaps in that.
When a Saturn V or when a rocket like this launches, it goes in stages. And there are three stages to a rocket launch for the Saturn program. The first one is the main engine. It's the one that gets you going. Yeah. And then it falls off. And then there's a booster ignition that gets you out of lower or out of the atmosphere, and that falls off. And then there's the last boost that gets you out of orbit.
Yeah.
And that one sends you to the moon, and that's the last stage. And that stage is where the astronauts are.
Well, that sends you into orbit. Because the Apollo missions leading up to the lunar, they just kept stretching the goals. So the stages of the mission would be to get into Earth orbit, then detach from the lunar module from the command module. And then to redock with those to test that functionality.
Right.
Yes.
And then from that, they slingshot around the Earth in a crosswise pattern towards the moon. And then they orbit the dark side of the moon, or at least this is what the lunar orbit, and then slingshot back and then come back to Earth.
Yeah. Peter just described Apollo 8. So when we get to that point, just rewind.
Yeah.
But before we get into the nitty gritty of Apollo, let's talk about the political kind of the climate
the
around
the whole program was definitely pretty politically driven. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty sure it's one of the most famous speeches in space exploration history. But it's John F. Kennedy's speech at Rice University in September of 1962. It's the one where he says, "Well, I'll let him take care of it from there."
But I do say that space can be explored and mastered without feeding the fires of war. Without repeating the mistakes that man has made in extending his writ around this globe of ours. There is no strife, no prejudice, no national conflict in outer space as yet. Its hazards are hostile to us all. Its conquest deserves the best of all mankind. And its opportunity for peaceful cooperation may never come again. But why, some say, the moon? Why choose this as our goal? And they may well ask, why climb the highest mountain? Why, 35 years ago, fly the Atlantic? Why does Rice play Texas? We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others too.
So after he, after I, you know, researched where the speech was and watched it and stuff, I wanted to go back and watch some other ones of his. He has one where he's accepting the Democratic nomination for that run. He talks about breaching into the new frontier. It's time for mankind to take control of the time and the tides and stuff like
that.
Yeah.
He's such a good speaker. I think we missed out on like 8 years of speaking from him.
Yeah.
Because they are
hard. Many presidential speeches that you can just remember.
For sure.
From memory.
But. You know, fun fact, the mayor of what's the Simpsons town? The mayor of
Springfield.
Springfield. Yeah. It's based on Kennedy. If you listen to Quimby, he's based on Kennedy. Are you a cool mayor? I'd like to think so.
Yeah, definitely. That heavy Boston.
Yeah, exactly. So that's like 1960s, Cold War. Our enemy is Russia. They're coming to get us with nukes. There's civil unrest in the country itself. Like, we're divided more. I would say we were divided more on civil issues than we were ever before in our history.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this new incoming Democratic president who wants to probably get his country going. He's one of those guys that's like, we got to move forward. We will always move America best. Yes. And stuff like that. So
very popular president.
Yeah. How do you do that? You unify them. And as we saw in that speech, we choose to go to the moon. And that's where the Apollo program got its birth.
Give us a goal.
Exactly.
National.
That's what got all the money for NASA then.
Yep. Yep. And I mean, that's probably the richest NASA ever was.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Definitely.
So where do we go? From 1962 at Rice University, let's jump ahead 5 years into the early morning hours of January 27th, 1967. And it was a dress rehearsal launch for the Apollo 1 mission. Your astronauts are Virgil Gus Grissom, who was on the Mercury missions and a Gemini mission. He had survived here. He had cheated death on his Mercury mission. His command capsule tried to suck him into the ocean. And Peter, I think, saw the same footage I did with the helicopter barely holding on. And they're like, get out. And the hook just snaps.
It already weighs quite a few tons. So, I mean, by the time that water gets into the cabin, it's going to be
you're done.
Two or three times that weight.
Yeah. So Virgil Gus Grissom has survived that. He survived a trip around the Earth in the Gemini program. And he is about to step forth and be the first of the Apollos. Then there's also Edward H. White, who was the first American to do a spacewalk.
Yep.
That they
in the Gemini missions.
Yeah, NASA at Houston at Mission Control had to force him to come in.
Yeah,
he was hanging on to the Gemini capsule, and he was just like, "I'm good. This is the best view of my life." And they were like, "Dude, Ed, you come in, Ed." And then the third astronaut on Apollo 1 was Roger B. Chaffee. Now, this was a dress rehearsal for the launch of Apollo. They bolted the command module closed, sealed it up tight, pressurized it, added an oxygen-rich atmosphere. During the test, a spark from underneath Gus Grissom's chair ignited an electrical fire. The high oxygen and high pressure atmosphere within the command module led to an instantaneous fireball.
Yeah.
It is widely believed that the three astronauts died instantaneously and did not suffer through burning alive, which is a blessing, I would say.
I can see that. It'd be like an enclosed bomb, basically, then. Yeah.
Right? And it'd be so intense. Like, the heat would just be immense. So this is NASA, which means there's oversight. Mm-hmm. And not only did they appoint their own Apollo 204 Accident Review Board, but both houses in Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives, got involved in overseeing the investigation. It was determined that there was an electrical fire, and that was the source. Also,
under Gus's chair.
Yeah.
Specific.
Yeah, yeah. also that led to them finding out that a pure oxygen environment is terrible.
Yeah.
To finding out that not having a way to blow the cabin door open is terrible.
Mm, right.
Not having the same pressure atmosphere inside the cabin versus out was not a good idea.
Absolutely. The failures that were identified in this catastrophe led to a safer Apollo from then on.
Definitely.
NASA director did not step down after that, but we did learn during the investigation that there were some problems with administration, and specifically in where they were contracted. It wasn't mission critical. The United States government eventually said that NASA was not at fault. This was an accident beyond their control.
Yeah.
But during the investigation, as all things, it tends to point out flaws in the system.
Right.
And every time there's been a huge accident on a NASA flight of some kind, it's always been something really small and unforeseen.
Yeah. I would love to do Challenger and Discovery. Yeah.
We can talk about those in the future.
If we ever decide to do shuttle missions, I would like to do those.
But those
too.
Are two really horrific accidents that happen in the future for NASA. And it's always something really small. I mean, just an electrical wire, an exposed electrical wire that blew up an entire cabin, killing three men. I mean, that you can only check the ship so many times. Right. Eventually, you got to go.
Yeah, absolutely. But this is not the end of NASA, obviously. I mean, we're 50 years in the future from here. But this is not the end of NASA, obviously. But it is the end of the Apollo program for a little bit, especially the Apollo 1 name. Mm-hmm. Out of respect for the families of the astronauts, NASA retired Apollo 1. It would never be used again. A little bit later on, like the next year when the Apollo program picked back up, it was the family conceded that continuing the mission under the Apollo title was still okay.
Yeah.
But Peter, maybe you can help explain why there are no Apollos 2 through 6.
So prior
to Apollo 1.
Yeah,
prior
to Apollo 1, there was kind of a management decision. Are we going to carry on with Apollo 2 through 6? And Apollo 2 through 6 were considered the Block 1 missions, which they were going to use the Saturn 4 instead of the Saturn 5 to test some of the, to test not only the vehicles, but the service module, test that rocket's capabilities out in orbit, and then bring that back, learn something from that, and then apply anything that we learned from that to Apollo 5. But if Apollo 1 had succeeded with the Saturn 4 rocket, they would have never, they would have been doing the same thing over and over again. The 2 and 3 would have been another Earth orbit with a three-man crew with the same rocket. And there was some hesitation. Should we do a mission that we've already done, which they hadn't done before? They had, in the Gemini mission, they had two missions that were exactly the same orbital path. And it was that was the first time that they'd ever had two missions that were the same thing. Mm-hmm. So they're at this point, they're trying to make bold moves. They're trying to get to the moon within a decade. Like, why are we doing the same thing? But then after Apollo 1, Apollo 1 pretty much sealed the deal. They not only got rid of the name like we had just discussed, but they had decided that they weren't going to do Apollo 2 and 3. And then Apollo 4, 5, and 6 ended up being unmanned low Earth orbit missions with the Saturn 5 rocket instead of the Saturn 4 rocket.
Yeah, and you do those missions unmanned because you're not going to immediately send up a crew.
Yeah.
You wouldn't, not after a catastrophe like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the important thing to know about NASA is that they don't stop. Yeah. NASA missions aren't planned, okay, that mission was successful, now let's do the next one. NASA missions are planned boop, 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 boop,
right.
In line.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not only is it mostly funded from the government and like, outside NASA sources, but they have astronomical amounts of time and math to work with.
Yeah.
You can't just stop. You got to keep going.
And it's an evolving process improvement. I mean, as manufacturing technologies increase and our knowledge of the mathematics of traveling through space increased, each mission had huge hurdles they needed to overcome. They were redoing the whole process every time. They were inventing launching into space.
Absolutely. And now I think we need to mention for sure NASA's not number one on anything in space except for putting a man on the moon.
Correct.
Russia got there first on pretty much all of these.
They were in space first. They had a man in space first.
Mm-hmm.
The Gemini missions were, or in the Mercury missions, were our attempt at keeping up with the Russians.
Yep. And, it's and they were still point, 4 years, 5 years behind mm-hmm. them.
And that speech that we discussed from JFK was the turning point in us being in second place.
Yeah, all in. We're going in.
We're going in for it. We're going to spend the money. And Apollo was our ticket to being number one at something.
Yeah. Yeah, and we choose to go to the moon. mm-hmm. So Apollo 7, it launched October 1968. The mission duration was 10 days, 20 hours, 9 minutes, and 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
The crew was Walter M. Shearer, who was the commander, Don F. Eisel, who was the senior pilot, mm-hmm. and R. Walter Cunningham, who was the pilot. The mission parameters were, let's try Apollo 1 again.
Yeah.
But let's try Earth it with the improvements we've made, the safety adjustments we've
right.
made.
Yeah.
Right. Let's do this right, guys. And it worked. 10 days later, they came back safely to the Earth.
And it was the first test of the service module, putting that up into space, into orbit, and then having it
right.
back in, yeah. to Earth.
Yep. Moving on from there, we got Apollo 8. This one, folks, in this episode, this is the money one. Apollo 8 was launched December 21st, 1968. The mission duration was 6 days, 3 hours, 42 minutes. The crew was Commander Frank F. Borman, Senior Pilot James Lovell Jr., and Pilot William A. Anders. And this was the launch that Peter talked about earlier.
Yeah. These are the mission parameters for Apollo.
Yeah.
And this is Saturn V.
Actually, it's the mission parameters for Apollo 8 through Apollo 10. So, I mean, they're just doing an orbit around the moon. So.
Yep. And each time we did it, we just did a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But Apollo 8 was the first time that there was a picture of all of the Earth taken by a man.
Right.
And Peter pointed out every person in the world, except for the cameraman and the two others in the crew, are in that picture. That's insane to think. That includes past and that includes future, because mm-hmm. you're not an alien.
Yeah,
you're not coming out of that picture.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
And I think, if I remember right, the coolest thing that Adam found about Apollo 8 was that they got to see a lunar Earth rise.
Yeah,
yeah, that's incredible.
That's a pretty amazing picture. If you haven't seen that,
yeah.
I'm sure they'll be
right
it'll
over
be somewhere,
the screen.
Yeah.
Lunar Earth rise is incredible.
Yeah.
The three astronauts decided that they were going to send a message back to Earth at this particular moment of Earthrise, and it was on Christmas Day, and it was, we are approaching lunar sunrise, and for all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 is a message that we would like to send to you. Each of them, the three of them, quotes the three first verses of Genesis. And then at the end of that, they say, and from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you and all of you on the good Earth.
Nice.
I mean, it's nice. Epic, right?
Oh,
it's
yeah.
epic.
Yeah.
It's mind warping.
It is.
It's a message from a set of U.S. astronauts by the moon talking to the entire globe.
Right.
Yeah.
But when you get outside of Earth and you see it like that, most people change to, like, mm-hmm. their viewpoint on it.
Citizen
everything,
of the planet.
Know? Right.
Yeah. yeah.
See, we all need to go to space.
I feel most astronauts feel that way. Most astronauts have that viewpoint. And even now, when there is footage from the International Space Station, the way that they communicate, they're communicating with the whole world. They're
right.
not communicating with just their
right.
country. The badge on their suit isn't, you know.
Yeah.
It's a part of their identity, but it's not, you know.
Yeah.
They're not like
It's not the important part of their identity.
Yeah. I mean, if you're sitting on ISS, you're orbiting every hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
Your whole view on how on
you
everything.
Live everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Wouldn't it be weird? Okay, you're coming around Africa, and all of a sudden you say, "Where the hell's India? What happened to India? It was here 15 minutes ago.
It's gone."
Pakistan happened. So from there, you've got the Apollo 9, March 3rd, 1969. The crew was Commander James A. McDivitt, Senior Pilot David R. Scott, and Pilot Russell L. Schweikert.
Wow.
And this is another orbit around the moon, but it's also a test of the detach and reattach of the command module
right.
and the lunar module.
The undocking.
Yeah, that, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that opposite of that really weird sex thing that people do on the internet.
Was the lunar module here's the in picture. This mission no. disposed of?
Sorry?
Was the lunar module in mission? This mission disposed of? Because they would have they detach when they come back to Earth. Did they leave it in orbit or do they?
I would assume that they would have left it in orbit because it would be a waste to just get it. But you can't re-enter with it.
They didn't use it. I mean,
you can't re-enter Earth's atmosphere with it. So it wasn't designed to take that kind of stress.
No, definitely not. It was one of the lightest structures that NASA's ever made.
Imagine where we'd be at if we were still cranking out manned missions at this frequency, you know?
Yeah, we'd be so much further along.
Yeah.
I'm thinking computers, man. I was wishing that the past would be a progression just like computers. We're just,
right.
You know, pumping them out so fast that, oh, hey, well, we discovered warp drive and Peter can be in Peter can be in Starfleet. But
so,
no.
Yeah. Hey, I'm right there behind you, man.
I'd be in Starfleet.
I would love to be the commander and you could be my engineer.
Negative.
Because that's totally how that would
probably,
go.
Probably. Or you'd be a red shirt.
Ouch. Ouch. Oh, man. Beam me up. That hurt. Let's see. So here's the parameters of the LEM. And it doesn't necessarily answer if it's, I actually think it survived reentry. After launching on March 3rd, 1969, the crewman performed the first manned flight of the LEM, the first docking and extraction of a LEM, two spacewalks or EVAs, and the second docking of two manned spacecraft. 2 months after the Soviets had performed this such thing with the Soyuz 4 and 5. The mission proved the LEM worthy of manned spaceflight. Further tests on the Apollo 10 mission would prepare the LEM for its ultimate goal of landing on the moon. So they did return with them.
Wow.
It was just incapable of taking an impact. But didn't it?
That didn't sound like a return.
Oh, it didn't?
I would have think they just parked it in Earth orbit.
Yeah.
And then kept docking with it when every time they'd go back up.
Because I think that it would create too much drag when they re-entered. Because in the previous, in the following missions,
so it would
the
have to be,
came
it would have to be very, very light on the lunar surface, right, to land. Mm-hmm. But to re-enter Earth, it would have to have heavy heat shields. Otherwise, pieces of it would tear off unless there was some kind of aerodynamic shielding over it. But that would have had to have been ejected.
It's on the moon. It's there's six of them on the moon, six limbs,
including the one from Apollo 10.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know.
Well, I don't think did Apollo. Oh yeah, it might probably is then.
Yeah, it's on the moon. They're all on the moon.
Crazy.
How many did you say? Six.
There's six on the moon, so I guess that would just be the 11 through 17.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Because then, yeah, they all had ascent vehicles
right.
in them. So that, I don't know where the LEM is from 9. Hey, you there listening and watching, if you can find out where the LEM is from Apollo 9 and 10, you let me know.
I really honestly don't know. I would assume that they just parked it and reused it. Mm-hmm. That would be make the most sense to me, I guess. But
yeah, they wouldn't
maybe
have
they're
used
really
it
cheap
in that
to
mission.
Crank out because they're just, because they're really light.
They wouldn't have used it in 9, 10, 9 or 10, so I feel like they'd want to reuse them.
Yeah, so if you launched it and then parked it in Earth orbit on 9 and then redocked with it on 10 and sent it over.
Yeah.
I could be completely wrong and I have no idea.
I'm reading over here and I don't see it. And I have nothing that says where it is. All right, moving on. We're going to move on to Apollo 10. And hopefully in the interim, you will let us know what happens to the LEMs from Apollos 9 and 10. Apollo 10 was launched May 18th, 1969. The mission duration was 8 days, 3 minutes, and 23 seconds. This was considered the F mission, or dress rehearsal, for Apollo 11.
Right.
It is what it is. Like, aside from actually putting people in the LEM on the moon, that's what Apollo 10 was.
Mm-hmm.
Was we're not the guys. So Thomas B. Stafford was the commander. John W. Young was the senior pilot, and Eugene A. Sarin was the pilot. So those are probably split up actually now into command module and lunar module. But it's what it is. Like how Apollo 7 was like, let's see if we can do Apollo 1 right. Apollo 10 is let's hope we can get 11 right.
Right. And they got just up to the point where they would have then landed,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't.
Yep, and that's where we'll that's where we'll end this episode. But before we go, let's talk a little bit about, like, I don't know, a little bit about these first Apollo missions. What do you guys want to note about them? They're ballsy. They're ballsy, yeah. But they're behind every step the Russians make by a couple months.
Right. Yeah.
It's a shame that it all had to be politically driven, right? But still, yeah. At the same time, it's a good thing that it happened.
Mm-hmm. I agree. If there's... Okay, so I don't think that nationalism is a good thing, but if there's anything that you want to feel good about it as an American, it should be Apollo.
Yeah.
Oh. Apollo is something that united the entire population, especially during and after such a great time of turmoil. Like, the civil rights movement was finally winding down in the late 1960s. Right. People were still worried about integration, but you had this thing that united us all, and it was Apollo. It was seeing this pillar of flame launch the bravest people in the world, mm-hmm. next to the Soviets or whatever, because they did it first, yeah. up out of our world, the thing that we evolved from that gave us life.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. There isn't much better than that.
No. So if you want to be, that's what you should focus on if you want to be proud to be an American. Now, that's my opinion. That's not like, you know.
Be proud that still today that NASA is number one today. Yeah,
absolutely.
That we've had the most successful missions and landings on other bodies in the solar system.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Or be proud that we're now cooperating outside of that. I mean, Cassini was just
a lot of the huge missions, yeah, require cooperation.
Yeah, yeah. But that was a cooperation between NASA, the European Space Agency, and the Italian Space Agency. Mm. And that's huge.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that we continue to strive in the footsteps of these people. I mean, I'll never be able to leave Earth's orbit, but I'll be damned if I don't enjoy talking about it. Right on. Well, before we go, I want to also say to our audio listeners, these two episodes, part one and two, are going to be very image heavy. So thank you for listening, first of all, but, You might want to check out the YouTube page just to get a little bit more clarity when we're talking about the difference between a Saturn V rocket or a Saturn IB or the different astronauts, because, I mean, if anything, their pictures need to be seen, especially for the Apollo 1 mission. You know?
Absolutely, yeah.
And other than that, I'm sure we got stuff wrong. I'll do my best to correct it while I do the editing, but let us know. We want criticism, peer review, and if there's a specific thing that you want us to talk about in science, all the cards are on the table now. We've gotten through all 10 of the designated episodes that I wanted to do.
Yep.
And so we're going to hit off with Apollo. We've got plans for more episodes in the future, but, you know, stay tuned and we'll take your suggestions. Other than that, for this episode of Science Nights, I'm going to sign off. I'm Josh.
I'm Adam.
I'm Peter.
And we'll see you guys next time when we finish up and go to the moon.